Okay. Good morning. This year is sponsored by Mrs. Helda Fisher in loving memory of her mother, Hentze Bas Chanoch Halevi, on the 41st Yahrzeit, Chav Vav Tammuz, Tov Shin Lamed, is when she passed away. And today is Chav Vav Tammuz? Tomorrow is Chav Zion? No? Whatever it is, I think yesterday was Chav Vav Tammuz. So we are learning Le'ilu Nishmat Hentze Bat Chanoch Halevi. Talking about Yahrzeits, as I picked this up at the desk, I remembered, wait a minute, there's another important Yahrzeit. And I asked Esther at the desk to check on, to Google Rashi. Rashi's Yahrzeit is the 29th of Tammuz, Thursday. Great Rashi. The 29th of Tammuz, 11:05. So we're going to learn also Le'ilu Nishmas Rashi HaKadosh. Okay. There are a lot of sources here today. I think the end is going to be that this is going to turn into two shiurim, one now and one sometime later. Don't get intimidated by all of the sources. But let's see. Number one, Vayomer Elazar HaKohen El Anshi HaTzava, Elazar the Kohen said to the people of the army, HaBoyim LaMilchoma, who had come to the battle, Zot Chukat HaTorah SheYitzivo Hashem Et Moshe, this is the law of Torah, the decree of Torah, which Hashem commanded Moshe. What we're talking about over here is Moshe had sent the army to attack Midian. Midian are the ones who had sent their women to entice the Jewish people, and the time had come to take revenge on Midian. They went out and they wiped out Midian. They came back from battle now. And Elazar the Kohen, remember that there's no longer Aaron passed away already in Chukat. Elazar is the one who was in charge of the Kohanim. So now Elazar the Kohen is telling the soldiers who are coming from the battle, this is the decree of Torah, Asher Tzivah Hashem et Moshe. And he quotes, this is what God commanded Moshe, and I'm telling you. Ach et hazor v'et hakesef et hanechoshet et habarzel et habedil v'et haofaret. Only the gold and the silver, the copper, the iron, the tin, and the lead. Pasuk didn't really tell us what you're supposed to do with all of these metals. What the Pasuk is talking about are vessels, pots, pans, knives, spoons, forks that are made out of any of these metals. What do you do with them? Kol dovar asher yavo ba'esh, anything that is used through fire, ta'avidu ba'esh, you're supposed to take it through fire, v'toher, and it becomes pure. Ach b'mei nida yitchata, water is to be sprinkled on them. V'chol asher lo yavo ba'esh, and anything that's not used through fire, ta'avidu ba'mayim, take it through water. In this one pasuk, there is so much Torah in this one pasuk. Let me explain what's happening here. We'll briefly see the Rashi who explains it. They are now being told, incidentally, this is the last battle that they have fought in the desert. The last battle. Just one moment. I have to take out a moment. I'll never hear the end of it. My dear brother-in-law, Mendel, from Toronto, was visiting here with us today. He's the one sitting next to my other dear brother-in-law, Michael. Now, Michael is here every week, But Mendel is on a visit to Toronto. Can you imagine what will happen after this year if I didn't welcome Mendel? Mendel, in the name of the Avram Silver Jerusalem College for Adults, the Israel Center, the OU in America worldwide, we welcome you here. We're very happy to have you, and you should have a successful visit and return temporarily to Toronto. Oh boy, that was sakonis nefashis. I saved myself. You know what? You know what the coin is telling him? The pots and pans and all the other metal vessels that they brought back from Midian, the spoils of war. It has to go through a process before you can use it. The process that is best known to us, of course, is the process of kashering. It was used for treifus. You have to kasher it. So how do you kasher it? So the Torah is telling us that anything that is used by fire, that means you cooked, the way in which it is removed is by using hot water again. You kasher. If it was only used in fire, as Rashi will explain, the spit of a barbecue, you can't kasher that by putting it into boiling hot water, because that's not how it became treif to begin with. It became treif to begin with by the heat of a fire. So you have to kasher it through fire. And then anything that was simply used without hot water or fire, it came, was used for cold things, then all you have to do is wash it. Take it through water and wash it. We're going to learn an additional halacha here, or for that matter, two additional halachas. There's also a halacha over here of it's tamei, and there's a process of purifying and purging something from tumah. And then the biggest great news that comes from these psukim here, and you'll see how it all happens, is here we learn not only the halacha of hechsher kelim, making kelim kosher, but there's a halacha of tvilas kelim, a keli that you get from a goy has to go through a process of immersion in a mikveh. The subject of today's shiur is tvilas kelim. It's going to be very exciting. All right? Now, the last pasuk is, and then v'chibastem bigdechem b'yom ha'shvi'i, they who've gone out to war have become tamei by contact with dead bodies, so they have to go through a seven-day process. And on the seventh day, wash your garments, utahartem, you go to the mikveh, v'achart, afterwards, tavo el hamachane, you shall come to the camp. Number two, the Rashi. We're going to go through this quickly. Achas hazav, the gold, the cup, the gold, the silver, the copper, the metal, the tin, all of them. Afal pi shelo hizhi lachem Moshe el al hilchus tumah. Elazar is telling them, even though Moshe Rabbeinu only told you about the laws of Tumah, that was back there in Parashat Chukat, they were told about contact with a dead body, a process of 7 days. Even though Moshe only told you about that, Od yesh lahazhir lachem. There is something else that you have to be cautioned about, and that's what I'm doing here. Od yesh lahazhir lachem al hilchus giul, with regard to the laws of purging, removing anything that's treif, that has been absorbed by the pot and the pan. Va'ach, the word ach is lashon miyot. The word ach only is a term that expresses exclusion, kloma, as if to say, m'muatin atem, You are excluded. Milishtamesh bakelim. You're not permitted to use these vessels. Afilu la'achat taharatan, even after they have been made pure from contact with the dead body, mitubat hamet, from impurity due to contact with the corpse, archi yitaru, until they have also been purified, mibliat isu nevelot, from that iser of treif that was absorbed into it. The guy cooked and baked and whatever he did with his treifus in there, you have to remove the treif. We come close to this, of course, when we kashif a Pesach, we're removing the chametz that is there in the vessels. V'rabotenu amru, and our rabbi said, achat azov, only the gold is stated to say, shetzorich lahavir chaluda shalad. Ach means you have to kashif only the vessel. But if the vessel has rust or any other impurity on it, you have to clean it. Just the metal has to be purged, not anything else. What? The handle? Yeah, the handle has to be kasher too. Now, just. We're not going to go through all of the laws, because if it's going to be all the laws, you're going to be here till next Tuesday, you understand? We're not going to do that. But there are going to be some specific laws that are going to be very, very significant. Okay. Now, shetzorech lahavir chaluda shelo, that one must remove a vessel's rust. Kodem shiagilenu, before purging it, you have to remove rust. And for that matter, you have to remove the price that's on it, the name of the company on a piece of paper. You got to get it all off before you can immerse the keli. And that's why it says the word ach. Ach is exclusionary. Only this. Shelo yehei sham chaluda, that there should not be rust there. Ach hamateches, the metal should be kemo shehu, the metal. Pasuk 23, kol dover ashiyova ba'esh, levasher ba'klum, anything that comes through fire, Rashi says that means anything in which you have cooked something, and cooking requires fire and water. Taviru ba'esh. And here comes, Rashi is paraphrasing the halacha that you gotta know this halacha. Kibolo kachpoto. Kibolo kachpoto. You can learn it. Don't be afraid. Kibolo, as something absorbs, kach, so, polto, it emits it and removes it. In other words, the way in which something became treif, that's exactly the way you purify it. Kibolo kachpolto, but Rashi is going to use his own terminology. Kidderech tashmisho hagoloso. Its purging is done in the manner it is used. Ma tashmisho al yedei chamin, that which is used for cooking by hot water, yagilo bechamin, you should purge it with hot water. Umashe tashmisho al yedei tzli, and that which is used by roasting, kagon hashpud, the spit, or the askel of the grill, yelabdo ba'ur, you're supposed to put it through fire. Those are the basic halachas of all kashering, and we use it every year, Pesach time. The stove top, you can't put the stove or the stove top into boiling hot water. Try it. You see, you will not be able to do it. But that's what's more important is, the chametz went in by heat, by flame. So you put on the flame in order to cleanse it. Ach b'mei nido yischata. Another exclusion. Lefi pshuto, according to its simple meaning, chitu zeh. Mei nido yischata, the water in which, as Rashi will explain, the water in which a woman whose nida immerses, a proper kosher mikveh yischata, that is where it's going to be cleansed. Chitu zeh, this sprinkling litaro is performed to purify it mitumat meit. This is used to purify it from contact with a corpse. Amalehem, Elazar said to them, Tzvichin hakelim gil, the vessels need purging litaram in hoiser in order to purify for them for that which is forbidden. It has to be purified from contact with a dead body. It has to be purified from the treif that has been absorbed into it. Sha'af lach shidan min ha'iser, also to the render them fit from prohibition, hitinon tefila, the Torah made immersion a requirement lekli matachot, for metal. Umeinida, we'll understand in a moment. Umeinida aksuvin kan, and accordingly, the waters of sprinkling that it says with, technically the word nida means sprinkling. Meinida is the water of sprinkling, but it has a further meaning. Darsho, our rabbis learn, mayim haruyon litva behem nida, waters in which are fit for a woman impure due to menstruation to immerse herself in for the kamahem. And how much is that? Our boim saw 40 saw. All right, you're going to get it all straight right away. Don't worry, just hang it. Next, v'chol davar asher lo yaveish, and everything that does not come into fire, kol davar she'ein tashmisho al yedei ha'or, for cooking by fire, for example, cups, jars that you use in cold, with cold water or with cold food. It's not cooked. V'lo balu iser, and they have not absorbed forbidden matter, tavir v'amayim, he shall pass it through waters, madbilo, he immerses it in a mikveh, v'dayo, and that is enough to render it fit for use, v'davka clay matachos, only if it is metal. All right. So there are a number of halachas that have been said over here. The halacha of purifying a keli from tumah, hechsher kelim, to kasher it and remove the treifus that's in it. These are kelim that they're bringing from goyim. And the third is this halacha that we know of tefilas kelim, even after it's kosher, even if it's a new keli, it was made by a goy, or even made by a Jew, but if a guy owns the company, you have to take it to the mikveh. Kalim have to go to the mikveh. Now, there are a number of questions that we have to ask. We're going to deal with the idea behind it, which is fascinating. Fascinating. I mean, I went through, as I was preparing for this year, so I went through all sorts of, I went over all the halachas of Tfilas Kelim. The one that fascinates me, and this is just, you know, in passing, what do you do with Kelim that are electric? What do you do, you know? A toaster, I mean, what else do we have? What are things, kettles? Kettles, yeah, what do you do with them? It's very, what I found was very interesting. Which one?
Well, the differences of opinion. Some people play with them, and some people don't.
That's exactly what I want to tell you. How do you like that? You got it? So I really found, yes, Michael? Oh, good, you're saying good. So I found, fascinatingly enough, I found four approaches. And of the four approaches, what's even more fascinating is the one that I heard years ago is not even mentioned by the Sifrei Halacha. I remember when I was a young man, and even when I got a little older than a young man, that you have to tovel, you take it and you tovel it in the mikveh, you let it dry for a week, and then you use it. And by the time it's dried, nothing is going to go wrong with it. I haven't seen it this written in any of the songs that I went through in the last week. Because the fact is that it's not the same keli after you put it through water. But the four that I found were the following. One says that you put it out of commission. In other words, remove some important part and then put it back in. Don't try it yourself. If you're going to choose this way to go, call in for the 59 shekel toaster that you bought at Supersal. You'll bring in a technician who's going to charge you 500 shekel to take a screw out and then put it back in. That's one approach. The other approach is give it to a guy, give it as a gift to a guy, and then borrow it from him. The halacha is that you only have to tevel something that which belongs to you, but if something that you borrow or you rent does not have to be teveled. If I'm making a simcha at home and I rent pots and pans and dishes from a geisha person who rents, I don't have to table it at all. So those are two possibilities, that you dismember something over there. There must be a better word. Or you put it out of commission, and the one who puts it back into commission is a Jew, so it's fine. The other possibility, as we said, is give it to a guy and borrow it back. And you're borrowing it back forever and ever after. More than 60 years ago, I asked my Rosh Yeshiva in Baltimore, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman, what do you do with metal, with kelim that are electric? So he says, since it only works when you plug it in, that means the keli really is immovable. If you can move it anyplace, it's not going to work. It only works when it's attached to the plug. Now, only something that is movable has to be kashered. But something that doesn't move doesn't have to be kashered. Now, I'm not making any suggestion as to which of these options you can take. I don't want to get into trouble with anybody. I'm too old to fight around with everybody else. There's a fourth opinion. The fourth opinion is of a posek whom I consider one of the biggest in this country and also a close friend, Rav Nachum Rabinowitz Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva in Male Adumim Birkat Moshe, one of the great poskim of this country, but I don't think they know him outside the Dati Lumi world. So he says, beautiful. It doesn't work until you plug it in. So you made it a keli. The Jew makes it a keli. Simple. Very simple. The guy can make a million toasters, but if somebody's not going to plug it into the wall, it's going to be absolutely useless. Which means by my plugging it into the wall, I made it. No, but if I have to use it at home, I can't use it at home until I plug it in. It's not that I plugged it in, I made it. Every time I use it, and I plug it in. That's what it means. Yes?
That's exactly what I want you to answer.
That's only you.
So
okay. Okay, but here, okay, all right. That's not the point. That just we have to throw in. The big question is the following. Why weren't Klal Yisrael told about this in their previous wars? There were a number of other battles against Sichon and Og. All of a sudden here, they're told about the law of kashering and Tfilas Kelim. What happened now? The halacha didn't apply before, now it applies, and not before. And then furthermore, yes? That's true, but there were other times that they took, and they took a lot. Why now? Why now? And furthermore, what's the difference if there's something wrong with a keli of a guy? What's the difference whether it's metal, or as the halacha also says, metal and glass? You have to tovel, earthenware, china, wooden keli, you don't have to. What's the difference? If it comes from a guy, it comes from a guy. What's the difference between one and the other? And then, if there's something wrong with the keli that comes from a guy, what's the difference whether I borrow it from him, or I rent it from him, or I buy it from him? They should all require tefillah, because there's something inherently wrong with this keli. Turn over. Many, many years ago, I came across a set of svarim called Hegyona Shel Torah by a Rav by the name of Rav Ben Tzion Fira. Rav Ben Tzion Fira was the Rav of Nir Galim. He must have died 30, 40 years ago. He put out about 4 or 5 sets of svarim and all of Chumash. He was he's good. And I remember the first time that I read this piece, and this is it. I'll tell you what he says, and then we're going to read it. What the Torah is establishing over here is the following principle. You're going into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to establish your own nation, your own country. First thing you have to learn is the extent to which you have to depend for the most basic needs on others. To that extent, you're not independent. A people that has to depend on others for pots and pans is in terrible, terrible shape. Independence means that I am a people living in my own land, and whatever are the basic and more than basic needs of this people, I provide it for myself. Everything that I am able to do for myself gives me a greater extent of independence. And whatever I depend on others, I'm, in that respect, weak. Not only weak, I may very well find myself in grave danger. Can you imagine a Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael? They need a knife and a fork. They don't have a knife and a fork. You need to go to the local guy to get it, or import it from some place in the world, from China, you know, made in China. Take it a step further. The extent to which we are dependent on others, if we would be dependent on others, for armaments, for guns, for tanks, you know what that means? We are weak unless we are able to provide everything that we need by ourselves, for ourselves. That's what the Torah is coming to tell us over here. And therefore we understand the halachas. People don't live on borrowed kelim or rented kelim. So borrowing and renting is not really a significant form. What I buy, that's what I live on. That's what I use. The most vital kalim for cooking and baking and eating are metal and glass. The message is be independent. You can't trust anybody. Let's read the way he has some beautiful sentences here. Ein kiyum la'am she'eino yakol la'asot ba'atzmo et kol hadvarim achiyuniyim shu tzorech lehem. There is no continued existence for a people that cannot make for itself those most vital, life-giving things that they need. Am einenu chayal shtal milchama kedava shel keva. A people cannot live on the spoils of war in any permanent way. V'gam lo al kniya me'achedim, and not also on buying from others. Hadvarim achiyunim biyoteh, those things that are most vital to our existence, you can't depend on anybody else. Tlud zeh ba'achedim, this dependence on others, tomenet b'chuba sakana, has within itself grave danger to the Jewish people. See, here it was. Here it was. I started a few weeks ago, I started rereading a book. The name of the book is The Boats of Cherbourg. What a book. By Abraham Rabinovich. Looking at you, I see that not too many people here who know what the Boats of Cherbourg are. One of the great suppliers of weapons to Israel was France. During the Six-Day War, the Israeli Air Force was Mirage Mistrers from France. Right. 2 years later, 69, all of a sudden, Charles de Gaulle places an embargo on all military equipment to Israel. They had another 50 fighter jets on order. Nope, will not be delivered. They also had a number of smaller size boats. I don't know what you call them. It's like we know of the PT boats, or not the border Coast Guard cutters, etc. Israel was planning to create the most unusual fleet in the world by these smaller size boats. They couldn't build cruisers or destroyers or aircraft carriers. A little country had to find a little way to pack a great wallop. So they came up with this own plan of these smaller boats, but they're going to carry missiles. And in the 50s, Israel was already working on missiles. Anyway, they say in Yiddish, to make a long story short, they had ordered a bunch of these boats from a French shipyard in Cherbourg. And here it is. There are five boats over there. Already good part of the money had been paid, but de Gaulle says, no, nothing is going to Israel. All right? You see what it means to be dependent on somebody else? Anyway, then comes the great caper. On Christmas night, and I say the word because the fact that it was Christmas, so the people who worked in Cherbourg were at home. Under the tree, on top of the tree, climbing a tree, drinking. They planned it. They'd planned it for months. Israeli sailors had entered Europe by every conceivable airport. They had rented the cars going. The end is, there's half the Navy is in Cherbourg hiding. And then here it is. It's Christmas night. At about 12 o'clock, the word goes out, and Stille Heit, Israeli sailors get into these boats. But there's a terrible storm, a gale 9-force storm. Fregnished at 2:30 in the morning, the admiral said, "We're going." And the boats started out. I can't tell you the rest of the story because it's so fascinating out in the middle of it all. It took about 24 hours until somebody woke up to realize, hey, the boats are gone. They're gone. And then all of a sudden, newspapers in the world, headlines were, where are they? Where are they? Everybody's looking for them. And the little boat, Aluch, you understand? I'm telling you, the Rabbeinu Shalom was out there with them. They went through the worst weather possible. And then, of course, they had planned everything in advance. They're not going to make it 3,500 miles all the way to Haifa without being refueled. So there was Israeli boats along the way waiting with fuel for them. Like a mother nursing its kinderlach, the five little boats came around the big boats. Out came pipes from one to the other. And they refueled them, the gate weiter. By the second day or the third day, the whole world was asking the question, where are they? And then already they're passing through the Gibraltar. So the British, you understand, the British, the whole world was enjoying this. They were enjoying every minute of it. They loved the fact that France was getting its comeuppance, and especially the British. So the British at Portugal, they were in contact with the boats. Who are you? There were no markings on it. It had carried no flag. Who are you? And then 15 minutes later, from Portugal, from the British headquarters in Portugal, comes a message, bon voyage. They were wishing them well on the rest of their journey. And that happened all the way through the Mediterranean. And they became, those five boats, they simply stole their own boats. You think you can't steal your own things? They stole their own boats under the nose of the French. But they were dependent on them. Dependent on them. And what about in the Yom Kippur War? Israel needed to be resupplied. Russia was resupplying Egypt and Syria. Now, I don't want to say what Kissinger had to do with it, but the one who ordered the resupply was Nixon. That's right, Tricky Dick Nixon, my favorite president. Why I like these crazy presidents, Nixon and Trump. But it was Nixon who said the great word, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, all right? What happened over here is the following. A people, in order to survive, a people has to be self-sufficient. That's the whole idea of the immersion of Caleb in a mikveh. You can't just take something that was made this up. And you know what's important about this? I'm sure that there are a lot of people that say, you know, goyim are tamei, they're dirty, they're filthy. That's not true. Not true. It's not that we don't like goyim. We're racist. It has nothing to do with that. It's not them. It's us. We can't depend on anybody else. And Torah tells us that you can't depend on anybody else by virtue of saying that these kelim have to go through a mikveh. And you know what going through a mikveh means? When something is immersed in water and it emerges, it's a rebirth, a new birth. That's what the halach of Tulis kelim is telling us. So of all things, yeah, you know, I don't make these things up, you know. I don't make this thing so.
yesterday's Jerusalem Post. Israel Navy ships in joint drill dock in French port, first time in 55 years. Wrong. How many years is it from 69 until today? Huh? 48 years, 49 years. They got the dates wrong. The last time Jewish ships were in a French port were Christmas Day of 1969. You understand? And here it is the first time. Because Israel went ahead and they just made a bunch of fools out of the French. But it was a courageous thing to do. But why did it have to be done? Because we don't have our own. It's no secret that I was not a big chassid of Shimon Peres. But in 1954, to make the foundations of the Dimona, I don't want to say what it is, that the building in Dimona. When I was here in Yeshiva in 1955, and we were passing this round building over there in Dimona, the country was 6 or 7 years old. Could hardly get a decent tomato, but this building was going up over there. So what did they call it? I'll tell you what they called it. Bet Charoshet, factory, Liyishur Bananot, to straighten out bananas. You understand, Bet Charoshet Liyishur Bananot. You understand, you brought bananas there, and they came in, curved, and they came out straight bananas. All right. That was the classic description of the nuclear plant in Dimona. How significant that was. That made Israel independent. That's what Torah is saying. You got to do for yourself. You can't depend on anybody. Let's go further in over here. V'lachein, rak dvarim kenuyim migoy, tav shel tumah nitpapem. Only something I buy from a guy has this impurity about it. Aval kelim shu'ulim uschurim, but kelim that are either borrowed or rented are not tameim. Ki she'ela uschirut einan dover shel keva. It's not a permanent thing. Renting or borrowing is not something on which people live their whole lives. You live on purchasing. V'rach kelim chashuvim, only kelim that are choshev, like metal and glass, need this tahara and a mikveh. Ki godel chashivuto shel keli, the greater the importance of the keli, godel chiyuniyuto, the greater is its significance and important to life. The more important it is, the more it becomes necessary for us to make sure that we make it on our own. The last paragraph. Lifnei knisatam shel bnei Yisrael la'aretz, before Jews come into the land, they are told she'im knisatam la'aretzam, when they come into Eretz Yisrael, aleihem liyot bilti tluyim b'chayrim b'chol ha'shtachim, they have to be independent of everybody in all areas. Im an achshav ha'yohechrech lo yeguna, if until now, we have no choice. We weren't in our own country. We weren't able to do our own things. We depended on others. That's okay, but not now. The next step from here, from Parshas Matos, the next step is going in to Eretz Yisrael. Ki kol davar she'am eino oseh ba'atzmo, whatever a people does not do for itself, yesh bo pegam, there's something wrong with it. It's not something that is to be accepted from any point of view whatsoever. You can't survive that way. America, 1948, placed an embargo on weapons to Palestine when we needed it most. We had to end up getting it from Czechoslovakia. And that was a Nes Goluy that Russia approved that we should get from Czechoslovakia. But I remember then, Oh, those were different. Those were different years. There was a boat scheduled to go to Israel from Hoboken. Hoboken along the Jersey coast, you understand. And then very, there was a big shipment of grain going to Israel, and they found guns in the grain. They traced it, and it turned out that it was a few fellas from Torah Vadas. I was learning in Torah Vadas at the time. I had nothing to do with it. I was 12 years old. I was 12 years old. I had nothing to do with it. And you know, in the New York papers, they were the heroes of the day. Yeshiva Barcham that are sending weapons to Palestine. Do you know what it meant? To be dependent on others? By the way, I'm going to tell you another approach of mine, and listen very carefully. Listen very carefully. Shemitah year is coming up again in 2020, 2001. You should all gesundheit be here. So, you know, there's the constant struggle or tension. 20,000. We're in 2018 now. 3 years from now. Add it up yourself. Okay? So now, there are those who hold of the Heter Mechira. The Heter Mechira is a Heter that was established much more than 100 years ago by Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, who was the Gadol B'Yisrael in Europe, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and then continued by the chief rabbis, Rav Kook, Rav Herzog. Well, mainstream Israel has a Heter Mechira. There are those who will not use the Heter Mechira. Incidentally, on a number of occasions in last Shemitah, so you understand, always Nusfarman coming out in English. The first thing I did when I saw one of these in a bookstore is I went to the index. What do they say about the Heter Mechira? And without fail, the Heter Mechira was either like in one sentence, it's nothing, it's not good, it can't be relied on. I put the book straight back, I wouldn't take it into my house. There are Gedolei Olam who have said that the Heter Mechira is good. Who are you, little schnook, writing a book over there? Go ahead and simply do away with it. But it's much more than that. So what do, those who don't use the Heter Mechira? They use Arab produce, or they use imported produce. Could that conceivably be a solution for 6.5 million Jews living in this country? Is it possible for us to permit that 6.5 million Jews in this country for a year or more than a year should live only on imported food? You know what we'd be doing? We would be placing 6.5 million Jews in Sakonis Nefashis Mamish. And what happens if somebody's going to place an embargo? Nothing comes into the country. The BDS guys will make sure that country after country in the world don't sell a thing to Israel. 6.5 million Jews die of starvation. Next step. Any solution that does not take into consideration all Jews is not a solution as far as I'm concerned. If you have a solution for you, me, I got my solution. We have a shetach over there in Jordan, and we're going to plant stuff over there, and we're going to import it from here and from there. If it's a solution just for you, count me out. The only solution to me is a solution that can be for Klal Yisrael. The pasuk in Bechukosai in Behar says, and if you're going to say, Ma nochal, what will we eat? In the seventh year, it doesn't say, if you will say, Ma ochal, what will I eat? Torah is concerned about all of Klal Yisrael. All of Klal Yisrael dare not live on that which is imported or purchased from others. That's Tfilas Kelim. Can't leave ourselves ever in a position that somebody can simply shut, close off all avenue of receiving food. It can't be. That's also part of the idea of Tfilas Kelim. It reminds me, down here at the bottom, yeah. This is so nice. This takes me back, 1959. What was the 12th year of Medinas Yisrael? 1960, okay. 60, I had arrived in Toronto in May of 1959. So it's the first Yom HaTzmaut that I'm in. Yes, I'm invited to speak at the Mizrahi over there, you understand? If I would have tried to do that today, they'd tar and feather me and burn me at the stake. Okay. Anyway, here it is. Here it is. I remember that it was the 12th year because they wanted the Rosh Shiva to speak in Hebrew. Hodu Lashem Ki Tov that I learned in yeshiva here in 55 and 56. I was able to speak in Hebrew. I remember my first sentence was, Lifnei Shtei Mesrei Shana, Kama Medina Atzmauna. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful speech. Okay. And one of the speakers, the guest speaker was Yosef Burg. Yosef Burg, he was the head of Mizrahi. He was a member of Knesset, I think, 30, 40 years. He was the Sar HaPnim. So he said a beautiful word. Watch this. In Hallel, Yisrael betach b'Hashem, Israel, trust in the Lord. As Rama Maginam Hu, he is their help and shield. Beis Aaron, bitchu b'Hashem, as Rama Maginam Hu. Yireh Hashem, bitchu b'Hashem, as Rama Maginam Hu. What's wrong with the grammar of these three psukim? There's something seriously wrong with the grammar. What? I can't hear you. No. It's first person, Yisrael. You're talking to Yisrael, betach b'Hashem, ezrechem u'maginchem hi. He is your help. He is your shield. What happened to the grammar in these three psukim? You understand? All of a sudden, a switch from first person to third person. Israel, trust God. He is their help and their shield. Who's they? What's it all about? That's what Yosef Burg asked. And he answered the following. What are you going to do? If you're not going to trust in God, what are you going to do? You have allies. You're going to, you know, you have America, you understand? France. You have allies. So he says, what's the point? If they're going to be able to help you, you know why it is? Because he helps them and he defends them. So why do you have to go this way when you go straight? What do you need to have an ally whom God will help? Forget the allies. You have trust and faith in God yourself. Yisrael betach b'Hashem. Beautiful, very beautiful, beautiful word. The idea of allies is also related to our discussion of Tfilas Kelim. The idea that we have to be independent. We cannot in any way place our trust or our hope in anybody else. Can't. Here we thought that America was our great ally. And now the 8 years before Trump were not good years for Israel. We find ourselves in a terrible situation because an ally betrayed us. Now, why I always end up reading the books that have to do with the Torah, I have no idea. But I nearly finished Michael Oren's book, Ally, about his years as the ambassador to Israel's ambassador to the United States. They were very, very difficult years. The Obama years were not years that we want to go back to again. And therefore, I don't understand, you know, American Jews who despise Trump. They have, it's because they don't have, they don't connect with us here. Israel is not on their agenda. It's a terrible, terrible, tragic situation. But let's go. I'm gonna go a little further too. You know, I'm not giving up. I don't know what to do. I'm going to go to number four for a moment. I'm going to go to number four. Four apsukim in Sefer Shmuel. The Jewish people that asked Shmuel, they want a king. Few chapters over there about a king. Finally, Shaul is anointed as king. And the enemies, the mortal enemies of the Jewish people are the Plishtim. And here it is, Plishtim are gathering for another invasion of Israel. Let's read. V'chorosh lo yimotze b'chol eretz Yisrael. There was no blacksmith to be found in all of Israel. By the way, this is one of the few places in Tanakh where Eretz Yisrael is referred to as Eretz Yisrael. There wasn't a single blacksmith. Ki omru plishtim, because the plishtim said, pen yasu ha'ivrim cherev ochanit. Lest the Jews make swords or spears. You understand? Jews couldn't make the most simplest implements of war. They were not armed. The plishtim made sure there was no place in the country. And by the way, you know what that reminds me? How would I have forgotten this? You know what the names of the five boats were? The chetz, the arrow. The cherev, the sword. Chanit, the spear. Sufa, the storm. Gash, the quake. Those are the five boats. Remember them. Chetz, cherev, chanit, gash, sufa. Now, I'm doing tshuva, by the way. I'm doing tshuva. I made sure that my children knew the names of four boats. It has gone down in the family that a grandson called me a few months ago and he said, Saba, how did you know? What did I want my kids to know? The turning point in the Battle of the Pacific in the Second World War was the Battle of Midway. And at the Battle of Midway, with Nisim Gluyim, the Rabbeinu Shalom was out in the Pacific. The American fleet destroyed the four Japanese aircraft carriers. Anybody here who can tell me the names of the four Japanese aircraft carriers? Well, you're going to find out about it now. The Hiryu, the Soryu, the Kagi, and the Akagi. The Hiryu, the Soryu, the Kagi, and the Akagi. That was the end. From that point on further, there was going to be another 2.5 years to the war, but it was constantly the Japanese on the run. But the toll was a terrible toll. So if I knew the Fashluginen names of the four Japanese aircraft carriers, I should certainly know the Sufa, the Gash, the Cherev, the Chanit, and the Chetz. And here it is in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they can't make a sword or a spear. Do you understand the situation they're in? This is the Tfilas Kalim situation. what they need most desperately in order to stand up against an enemy that's going to attack. They don't have it. And they don't even have anybody to buy it from. They have nobody to borrow it from. And it says, Vayerdu kol Yisrael. So now, you know what they have to, you know what happened? But people needed to sharpen implements that they used in plowing and planting. So all of that had to be done by going down to Plishtim. You had to go and get some guy to sharpen your implements. Vayerdu kol Yisrael, all of Israel went down La Plishtim. Lil Tosh Ishet Macharashto, each man to sharpen his plow, Ves Eto and his spade, Ves Kardumo and his axe, Ves Macharashto and his hoe. Terrible situation. Vaita Pitsirapim. Watch how the Navi describes this. And there was a multi-grooved file. They came up with some kind of a very crude kind of implement that was called Petsida Pim, with which they were able to sharpen things. They were in a terrible state. V'hoysa Petsida Pim l'machreshot v'la'itim v'lishlosh kilshon v'la'kardumim u'la'tziva dorban. For all of these things, they had a means by which they could do, you know, a bit of a job. But the country was simply without a weapon. Nobody in the entire people had a sword or a spear. Asher et Shaul vet Yonatan. The only ones who had. Vatimotze lishoel uli Yonatan beno Shaul and his son Yonatan had sword and spear. And Rashi says, Nes hoya. It was a miracle that there were two swords in Israel. That's what Tfilas Kelim is all about. Anything that we have to depend on for our survival, we can only depend on Yiddish hand. What we make for ourselves, we have, and only that we depend on. And of course, that's all with a Nez Godol min Hashemayim. That's why I haven't studied it well yet, but I'm going to have to study it. There was a point at which there was a plan for a Lavi plane that would be made in Israel, a fighter jet made in Israel. And I'm afraid to say it was a Frume Yid in America who worked for the government that killed the Lavi. Didn't understand that a little country like ours has to be able to make everything. Thank God we can make the Merkava tank. Thank God we make missiles of all sorts. We're one of the biggest exporters of weapons in the world. But that Tfilas Kelim is not because there's something disgusting about Goyim and their Kelim. It's because I depend on them. I'm not allowed to depend on them. They go through the passes of Tfilah. It's a new Kaylee. I made it. That's it. Huh?